Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Chris Martin. Sweeping those streets I used to roam and sometimes own. I'm Greg Masters, and you're listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am the producer and co-host of the show, and This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by healthinnovationmedia.com. Follow us on Twitter, at healthtechmedia. And joining me today in the virtual booth and broadcasting from our home base in Mill Valley, California, is my partner and co-host, interviewer extraordinaire, Dr. Pat Salver. Pat, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me okay, Greg?
I can hear you okay, and we can never take anything for granted in the VOIP or Skype digital media domain, so it's always good to check. And today, fresh back from the Washington, D.C. Bonanza from the American Health Insurance Plans session on Medicare, Medicaid, dual eligibles, and our Nimble Roadshow for This Week in Health Innovation's focus on the Health 2.0 Countdown. We have two really exciting people that we get to talk to, two entrepreneurs, thought leaders, who are co-authoring a book that we're going to hear about, ePatient 2015, Digital Health Trends That Define the Connected Patient of the Future. And with that as background, I'm not going to give you any more information. We've got an exciting deep dive today about these two individuals, what they've done to date, and what's on their radar at Health 2.0. So with that as a background for our guests, Pat, over to you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Greg. So when I had a chance to take a look at both what Rohit and Barn are doing, I got so excited. These are two really interesting guys who are up to some cutting-edge stuff. And we're going to start by talking about their new book that's coming out, which is called ePatient 2015. It's coming in October 2013, so I'm assuming, and you guys can let me know if that's the case, that you're probably going to be rolling it out at Health 2.0 and maybe even doing a book signing. So tell us a little bit, I think I'll start with you, Fard. Tell us a little bit about the book. How did it come to be? What's your connection with Rohit? What's this all about? What are we going to learn if we get this book?
Sure. And can you hear me?
I can.
Hello, Pat. Okay, great. So thank you very much for having us both. I kind of wanted to just take a step back and talk about, you know, how Rohit and I actually got together, and then turn it on over to Rohit to talk a little bit more about the big picture around the book, because he was the one who came to me with this idea, and I jumped right on it. But you know, in a blog post that Rohit wrote a few months ago, introducing the book to the world, he mentioned, you know, talked about how the FDA, you know, is accidentally brilliant, and that we both met each other at a pivotal moment, kind of in online/social media regulatory world, at a major hearing that the FDA held, focusing on how pharmaceutical companies and other folks in regulated industries could and should be using the web and social media for marketing and communications purposes. And so both of us spoke at that hearing, both testified at that hearing, and we'd known of each other beforehand, but it was just one of those moments in time that we kind of got to know each other a little bit better, and we kept in touch over the years. And so, you know, last year I launched a study called DigiHealth Pulse, which is designed to help us really understand where the future is going as it relates to how consumers are looking at it, embracing a range of health technologies, as well as how digital content and social media and the web actually influences health behavior. And so Rohit learned about that and then approached me about this particular collaboration. So very happy, you know, that's kind of where, you know, how we got together and a little bit about, what I bring to the table in particular. So I'll hand it over to Rohit to talk a little bit more about what he does and also the book.
Yeah, and Pat, I mean, that's a great question, which is, you know, why write this book and what's it really about? And I think that, you know, for Fard and I, it's this interesting opportunity to shine a flashlight towards confusion. And I think you could easily classify a lot of the conversations that are out there about healthcare right now, and in particular the future of healthcare, as being very confusing for people. And so one of the things we wanted to try and do in this book, and it's very intentionally kind of titled ePatient 2015, because we're taking a futuristic look at healthcare, but not so far into the future that we're going to have, you know, flying cars and things like that. It's, you know, in the near-term future. And I think that's a really interesting discipline to apply to future thinking and research, because what you're doing is you're looking at things that already have seeds of beginning today. Anything that's going to happen in 2015 has already started right now. It's just going to accelerate. And so that's the lens that we put on this. And so the, yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm sort of hoping that you're going to be able to share with us some of the digital healthcare trends that you talk about. You talk about 15 trends that define the connected patient of the future. Can you give us a peek at what's going to be inside the book?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, this is going to be our first chance to do that. So we're very excited as well, because we haven't shared a lot of these yet. And so Health 2.0 is that coming out moment. Yeah, so I think, you know, the way that we looked at this, and we're going to give you a couple of the trends in the call today. So we're going to sneak peek some of those things, because I know people want to hear those. But ultimately, when we looked at how to define these 15 trends, what we ultimately found came up a lot was three core themes that sort of aligned all of these trends, and they all related to some big problems in healthcare right now. And, you know, the first key theme that we really identified was something that we started to call health hyper-efficiency. This idea that technology was allowing for healthcare to become ineffective. And, you know, the way that that kind of plays out is with a couple of trends, and I'll give you an example of one of them, which is something that we started to call the device divide. And it's sort of based on this idea of the digital divide, which we all kind of hear about in media as the difference between people who have access to digital technologies and people who don't for a variety of reasons. And increasingly, one of the things that we identified was this separation between people who will have access to medical technology or won't, and how that's going to impact the care that people get and sort of create this tiered system that already sort of exists. So we really kind of dig into why that happens.
I'm sorry, Rosie. So when you say we have access to medical device, are you talking about you're not talking about apps and health on the phone?
No, very specifically. I mean, yeah. It's very specifically actual devices. And really kind of digging into that in the healthcare system. So in terms of delivering care. So, you know, the discipline that we really applied to, I mean, that's just kind of one example, but the discipline we applied to how we shared these is we really went out, we started to look at examples of where this trend is, and then we applied some of our research ability. And I'll let Fard actually jump in here and talk about some of the ways that we did some of the research to identify some of these trends, because I think it gives you some good background into why we think each of these things are trends.
So thank you for that, Rohit. So basically, Rohit in his books, and you can read about this, Lykonomics and also his business trend reports, takes a very curation related perspective to understanding where the world is going, both in health and beyond. I have a lot of experience in conducting consumer facing market research, and I've been doing this you know, for almost a decade now, focusing on a range of things related to how consumers perceive technology, their perceptions of new trends, and things like that. And so the DigiHealthPulse study that I mentioned previously really flows into that. And so what we've done with this is we've taken, curation approach that Rohit has and the original empirical research based approach that I take, and we've combined them in this particular book. And so when we're talking about things, for example, like the device divide, back to your question about what that actually means, is the fact that there has been a concern, particularly in the EHR or EMR community, about the fact that there are a number of underserved communities that don't have access to electronic medical records, even at the basic level. And so they don't have access to the types of continuum of care and some of these other issues that impact people, patients, you know, for example, who are sometimes switching doctors, quite often based on their economic or regional or location situation, and actually, you know, carting paper records back and forth between doctors, to the fact that they're amongst, people of certain incomes, they may not have the ability to get the latest apps or access the latest innovations in the digital health space, partly because they may not be able to get the latest iPhone, you know, that's just come out, for example. And so when we're looking at these particular trends and talking about these things, we're looking at it really from what we like to call a human-centric or people-first perspective. You know, how are these technologies influencing people, either, you know, helping them or harming them, or things that we really need to be thinking about more carefully as we become much more digitized in how health is thought about and delivered, both here in the United States as well as around the world. So hopefully, Pat, that addressed your specific question about that particular trend, as well as, you know, how we actually came up with these.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting because obviously an important issue for us in this country, and as you point out, globally, is health disparities, the people who have and the people that don't. And from your perspective as futurists and kind of experts in this whole arena, do you think that the new healthcare marketplaces that are scheduled to go live Monday, the marketplaces will be live, and people will be able to, who didn't have insurance before, are going to be able to, now get health insurance. Do you think actually that will have any impact on this device divide that you're talking about?
Yeah, actually, you know, there's a related trend that we kind of split out because called multicultural misalignment. And one of the things, you know, that the Affordable Care Act is going to, you know, really do is bring a whole bunch of people into the system, older people, younger people, people who've not been eligible for insurance in the past, from different cultures and backgrounds, who will be coming into the system for the first time. And so this whole issue of multicultural misalignment basically boils down to the fact that the people who are developing the innovations may not have the perspective of their culture, background, ways of thinking, health literacy, technological literacy, et cetera, that actually enable them to develop tools and innovations that people will engage with. And so if we think that digital health and health technologies will actually, benefit outcomes, will improve behaviors, will increase a whole range and improve a whole range of health status indicators, especially in these communities that are not only burdened with higher rates of disease, but also have economic and financial challenges. And so this whole idea of the multicultural misalignment is really a big issue and something that we're directing specifically toward the innovation developer community, in that there really needs to be an appreciation for diverse perspectives and not developing kind of one-size-fits-all solutions and expecting them to have the same results within these communities that are starting to access healthcare. Because if we want to bend the cost curve, as we like to say, this whole issue of reducing chronic conditions and preventing medical care is going to be critically important. So So that's another trend, to give you another sneak peek, that we're focusing on, that is both related to what's happening with the Affordable Care Act, and I think just something to be thinking about in general.
Yeah, I think that what you say is critically important. I go to a lot of events where the developers are, hackathons and Health 2.0 meetings, and I'm continually amazed when I have young people who say things to me like, their idea of somebody who's over 60 is that they're all decrepit and can barely walk, and they're designing these solutions for somebody who's a senior who really may or may not be the typical senior. And I think that can only be compounded if you start talking about cultural issues of cultures that these developers don't really understand. And so the question is, how can we actually get the voice of the consumer heard more clearly by the developers? Do you guys have any thoughts about that?
In terms of how to do that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you think it's important to do, and if you think it's important to do, how can we go about doing this? I have it's a little bit of a self-serving question, because I have a company called Health Tech Hatch that has that as one of its goals. But I'd love to hear from you guys, with your perspective and the research that you've done. How can we really be sure that these solutions do start to address those issues, those multicultural issues? And I love your term, multicultural misalignment. How can we get this aligned?
Right. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just address that briefly, and then turn it back to Rohit, who can provide some examples related to how we can get this right. But in terms of the definition of multicultural misalignment, it's not just about ethnicity or race. We include age within that, and we have a great quote from Bonnie Feldman in the book, who you might know, Dr. Bonnie, of her blog, Dr. Bonnie 360. And one of the things that she said from an age perspective is, you've got not only not enough older people, but not enough people in the middle who are dealing with these issues of taking care of aging parents, also taking care of their kids and themselves. And so this issue of age, this issue of income, this issue of ethnicity, of culture, I think it's an absolutely critical issue. We both think it's an absolutely critical issue, which is why we highlighted multicultural misalignment as one of our trends, because if it's not addressed, it's going to become a bigger and bigger problem. So let me turn over to Rohit so he can address that issue as well as maybe bring up some of the other themes and trends that we're identifying in the book.
Yeah, and so can you guys hear me?
Yes.
We can.
Okay, great, because I lost my connection. I had to dial back in. I wasn't sure. So I think one of the things that we did find, and this kind of leads into other of the major themes of the book, which is something that we call digital peer-to-peer healthcare. And it was essentially around this idea that people are helping one another, increasing part of their ecosystem. And when you start to think about the multicultural side of it, it brings that community element back into how people are actually learning and getting the healthcare that they get, and getting support in cases where they have everything from rare conditions to things that disproportionately affect certain populations versus other populations. So one of the trends within that section that we really talked about was the idea of virtual counseling. That now you have online social networks that you've had for a long time, where people have been able to congregate. Now really what's starting to happen is they're taking the place in many ways of something that might have been seen as more traditional counseling on a more turnkey level in between individuals. That's had a fascinating impact in terms of solving some of those issues of isolation, some of those issues of just feelings that associate with getting certain diagnoses and having to deal with those, and the mental health issues that sometimes go with that as well. So it's kind of turning more towards that emotional support side of things.
Well, it's very interesting that you bring this up because hang on just a second. I want to insert myself in the conversation here. Just last night, I read an article in the Annals of Internal Medicine, mainstream medicine, on social media and HIV prevention. And they did Ravi, who what you talked about, they identified peer leaders in the community of African American and Latino men who have sex with men and are at risk for HIV, and effectively used Facebook to get the prevention message out, and they were able to demonstrate that people took a free home HIV test and actually altered some of their high-risk behaviors. So think of the power of being able to use social media, combined with what we know about peer-to-peer, to actually get that patient engagement that's been so elusive that everybody talks about, and get the behavior change that, again, has been elusive and everyone talks about.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely, Pat. And I also wanted to mention something else that we want to do in the book as well. One of the things that you notice about this particular conversation that may be a little different from the conversations that you have with some other folks in the digital health space is how much we're talking about people. We are very, very interested in how technology influences people, how people interact with technology. And one of the things that we say in the book is that, health is about humans, not about machines. And so, we are very excited about, the advances in things like big data. We're very excited about mobile health. We're very excited about wearables. All of these various technologies are very interesting. But the one thing that we wanted to emphasize, and we do in the book, the single criterion that we look at is, in terms of identifying these trends and how these things are coming together, is how they're going to influence people, and particular e-patients, which we include to mean both patients and caregivers. So that's the other thing that I just wanted to emphasize as well, as people are thinking about this book and what makes it different from things that have come in the past.
That's terrific. So I actually wanted to take a little bit of our time and talk about some of the other things that you both are doing. And, Rohit, I'm going to start with you because I tootled on over to Amazon and I took a look at Lykonomics. And I have to say that as soon as we're off this radio show, I'm going over to buy a copy. Tell me a little bit about Lykonomics and maybe give us one example of how being likable actually helped to increase ROI. I love that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, a lot of my work has been, my background is as a marketing professional. I spent most of my career looking at marketing, and ultimately what that comes down to is influence and understanding how people are influenced. Understand that better, tend to better in marketing. And, that's a theme that we brought over into the e-patient book as well, because it's really ultimately about understanding behavior, healthcare oriented. I think one of the things that really fascinated me, and this is why I wrote Lykonomics, was this fundamental idea that we do business and build relationships with people that we like, and that trumps everything else in a lot of cases. So one example that I used in the book that was really interesting for me was Costco and the loyalty that Costco has as a company and how they generate that. And one of the secrets that they've gotten, it's not, when you hear it, it's probably, well, duh, that's not really that much of a secret, but it does tend to be very unique in companies, which is, Costco has a very specific policy that says, A, they're going to pay their employees far more than their competitors and give them full healthcare benefits and all of the sorts of things that you don't expect retail, but B, they're also going to limit their margin that they make on any product 15%. So Costco will literally sit there and go through every product that they sell, and if they mark it up more than 15%, they'll reduce the cost so that they keep their margin at 15%. So, if you think about
the retail business,
yeah, I mean, that may sound like, well, gosh, they're making 15%, that's a lot. But, you go to, any retail outlet that sells clothes, and I guarantee you their margins are 70, 80%, maybe even more on the things that they're selling. So to limit things to 15% is pretty dramatic in the retail space. But they do it because they believe that's the way to do business, and they're happy with 15%.
Yeah, great example. So I also, Bard, wanted to talk to you briefly about what you do in your day job besides writing great books. Tell us about Inspectos. First of all, unusual name, what does it mean? And then a little bit about what you do. I've been on your website and have a couple things that are so tantalizing. One is that you deliver brains on demand. So tell us about Inspectos and tell me how I can get your brain when I want it.
Thank you. Basically, Inspectos means to see. Basically, it's a play on the Latin word specto, and that really is around kind of what, you know, actually gets back to why, you know, why Rohit and I are writing the book together, because, you know, at Inspectos we're really trying to illuminate the digital health future to help people to understand how they can use these technologies to shape how people behave. And then we're also looking at a very specific issue within digital health in terms of how information is exchanged online, you know, in social media, on websites and forums and other places. And we have a technology that we built called InMobius, which is basically means like it's a very flexible technology that essentially answers the question of whether or not digital health content on the web, social media, mobile, et cetera, actually influences the way people behave in the short term and the long term. So one example might be, you know, it's flu season right now or coming up. There's a lot of messages online and in social media and other places about getting the flu shot. You know, how do those messages influence people's short-term behaviors based on their baseline psychological and perceptual profiles? So our mission really is to help people understand the digital health and health technology landscape and also figure out how to get people to take action around health and wellness. Related to the, you know, brains on demand, that was something actually that we launched just a couple of weeks ago, and basically to provide people with an opportunity to get short burst advice and insights about the health technology and digital health landscape in a way that is really flexible and easy for people. So people don't have to sign lengthy contracts to get, you know, say if they want to, you know, talk with us, talk with me about, you know, one of the themes in the book or something related to health behavior change. You know, all they have to do is, you know, sign up online, you know, provide a credit card, pay for it. We have an automated system to get people in the queue, and then they'll have access to these, you know, very deep, intensive one-hour sessions, or they can book multiple ones. So I don't want this to be a sales for the MicroStrategy engagements, but that really comes out of this wish to help as many people as possible understand where this landscape is going, how to change consumer health behavior, and do so in a way that's easy for as many people as possible to be able to have access to that level of insight.
Well, that's fantastic. I knew this half hour was going to fly by, and indeed we're getting towards the end. So what I wanted to close with is what you guys are going to be doing at Health 2.0. Greg and I are really excited. We'll be there Sunday through the end. And we'd love to know when you're presenting, what you're presenting. Are you doing a book signing? Help us understand how we can help you get more people to know you at Health 2.0.
Sure. Yeah, so Roy, do you want to take that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are basically premiering for the first time the book and some of the data and insights in the book and the trends. We're going to do things. One is announce pre-orders for the actual book. Second thing is basically everyone who attends the session is going to get an excerpt of the introduction and basically the first chapter of the book, all for free, obviously, kind of like a promotion, if you will, to get people excited and interested in the book. That'll be something that we start distributing pretty much right away. So we're very excited about that, about making that available. The book, when it does come out in later October, is going to be available in print as well as in EPUB version.
Great. And can you squeeze in just a word about exactly when and if you know where your talk is going to be?
Fard, do you have that in front of you? I believe it's on Tuesday, October 1st. I think it's 11:30. Is that right?
Yeah, Tuesday, October 1st, 10:30. Check the Health2.0 website for the agenda. We're going to be premiering the book, providing an excerpt, and we're very excited to be here there. And I also just want to thank Matthew for allowing us to have a space to premiere the book at Health2.0. He's been very, very helpful in a number of ways, and I just wanted to say thanks to Matthew. And yes, I did mute my mic because I did get that email.
Well, that's going to have to be the last word. What an incredible, incredible chat. If you missed any of it, this will archive on healthinnovationmedia.com or blogtalkradio.com/healthtechmedia. And there you have it. Check out the Health 2.0 website. I'm going to fall classic, health2con.com. Shout out to Matthew Hook, as always, and my partner, Pat Salvo, Greg Masters for Health Innovation Media. Talk to you tomorrow.
It's the world.